Hi folks, welcome back to another episode of Talk Sex with Sugar. And as you know, every episode has been a hit, back to back. And this one is not about to be an exception. So get comfortable, get your snacks, get your drinks. You know, make sure you're very comfortable because you're about to get in for the ride of your life. Welcome to today's episode of Talk Sex with Sugar. And on today's episode, I'm having an amazing guest, a superstar. We have been friends for quite a while now, and I have seen her grow. And drum rolls. I have Ayodeji Bello on the show with me today. And let me leave her to introduce herself first before we dive in. So hello, Ayodeji. Welcome to today's show. Please introduce yourself to my guest.
Hi, Pelumi. Thank you very much for having me. I'm so happy to be here. I've followed your podcast and I'm truly inspired. And it's such a privilege to share my story and my ideas here. So my name is Ayo Bello Awodoyin. I run Initiative for Girls' Rights and Health Development, where I promote reproductive health education for young people and also campaign against harmful practices like female genital mutilation. We've been operating for 7 years now, and we've done a whole lot of projects, so people can check up on social media and website for, you know, detailed information on all the projects. If anybody wants to work with us, volunteer with us or partner with us, we are always available for that. We work, let's say, round the clock, 24/7, because of the aspect of LGBT response as well.
Okay, thank you very much, Ayo, for that wonderful introduction. So basically, today I just want to have a conversation with you about your work in the space of FGM, you know, trying to change harmful traditional and cultural practices. I'm quite inquisitive into how did this start? When did this start? What was your driving force? At what point did you know that this is what I want to do? This is what my mind is tending to. This is what I really want to do. I have a soft spot for this. How did that happen? You know.
Thank you very much for having me. So, I started my organization in 2015, but prior to then, I knew I wanted to do something for the girl child. You know, considering all of my experiences growing up, you know, I have experienced some form of injustice, and maybe I will share, you know, just for the authenticity of this podcast, because I believe that when we are sharing stories and just talking, you know, I think it's important that we capitalize on true life events, survivor stories, to be able to drive on our point. Yes. So the two major injustices I experienced in my life as a young girl were my driving force. So I finished secondary school quite early, I think at the age of 15, and I didn't want to stay in the house, so I went to a polytechnic. Okay. Before gaining admission to Obafemi Awolowo University. So I went to get your polytechnic in Besa, and I was studying business administration. And while I was in my ND2, I think I was about 17, you know, I was going to school one day, I was going for lectures, and then I met this guy from another school, not looking good and all of that. And then he reached out to me and said, "Hi, please, I need you to do me a favor." I mean, being a young girl, vulnerable, empathetic, I felt okay. He said, "Please, I'm going to my school and I need you to do me a favor. I don't school here, but my school is just down the road, which is Crawford University. You know, it's a private university. Once we go into school, they don't let us come out unless we get, you know, passes, like three passes. We only have three options to come out in a semester. And I said, okay. And then he says that the name of the drug is weed. I'd never heard weed before in my life. I said, okay, that's what you want. I can help you. No, at first I was like, okay, so why don't you get it from your sick bay or you just buy it now, you know, by yourself? And I was like, no, that's it's a local drug. You know, he just said a lot of things. He was whining me, and I thought, okay. And then he described where I would buy it, and then he gave me 500 naira to buy it. I don't know if I'm going to blame myself, but there's no reason to blame myself because I've grown past that. You know, and the next day I went there. And when I got there, I didn't like the faces I was seeing. They looked very, you know, strong faces. And I told my bike man, please, can you help me buy weed? They said there's something called weed. Please buy it for me. I want to give it to a friend who is not feeling too well. And I see that the bike man smiled and went in to buy it. So when I smelled it, I felt like, this thing is offensive. But anyway, it doesn't matter. And then I went to the school. I went to Crawford University. I met with the security. He says, hi, who are you? I said, I'm looking for my friend. I brought his drug and I went in. So maybe they smelled it or whatever. They said, oh, who do I want to see? I told them his name. And then they said, okay, no problem. And they asked me to wait at the waiting area. And I waited and waited and waited. You know, I just saw that some of the officials, they were coming. You know, everywhere was busy. I saw men in uniform. Someone else came to ask me, who do you want to see? I told them his name. And I said, that's the person I want to see. So why do you want to see him? He's my friend and I want to give him drugs. He asked me to get him something and I want to give it to him. I'm late. I need to go home. I need to go back home. And then there was a siren. And then this guy came. And I'm like, hi, what's up? Here is your drugs. And he's like, am I mad? Excuse me. Do I know you? I felt like, you gave me 500 naira yesterday to help you buy this thing. You came to my school. But you know the guy I saw yesterday? And there was a lot of drama. And then police came. And then they said I was a supplier. And what the guy said was, I just came from home yesterday. How could I be the one? I've never been to that school. You know, that was when they kept talking. They now mentioned Indian hemp. I'm like, Indian, and I know Indian hemp, but I don't know weed.
No, it has weed.
Oh, and I had never seen it before. They said I carried Indian hemp, and hand me over to NDLEA. I was 17. I was 16 going to 17. So, you know, it was a very, very, it's one of the worst days of my life. The guy denied me blatantly. The security was just too much. And then they called the police to come and take me. And I was handcuffed. I was handcuffed and kept in the car. And then they drove me down to the police station. Nobody listened to me. They took my phone. They took my school bag that had my notes and everything. And I was already crying. I'm like, okay, fine. I don't even know you again. Chibi, you didn't send me. Let me be going home. They said, I can't go home. It is a punishable offense. It is a this. I came into their school. You know, all of that. And then I got to the police station. And then my parents called me because normally I get home by 7.
Mm-hmm.
Because I go from home. I didn't stay in the hostel. I get home by 7 every day. And they kept calling. They took my phone. They could not access me till like 11. They had been worried. They had looked for me. And they kept me in the cell as a 16-year-old girl.
Which is even illegal. Without even calling her parents or her family or anything.
And there were lots of accusations. They said I was a prostitute. I was a drug dealer. You know, for a 16-year-old, I had not even been able to wrap my head around what happened earlier. And then I was in the cell for 5 days, 5 good days with other people, boys and girls. 16 year old boys and girls in the same cell. There were lots of harassment. There were lots of, don't even let me talk about it.
I'm so
It
sorry.
was such a bitter experience. My parents came in, they were typical African parents. Why is he innocent? How could you be so gullible? How could you be so vulnerable? How could you, people blame you for being just being,
Being a child
for being a
or being
child,
innocent.
So it looks like he's a liar. Why would you say you have never heard weed before? Why would you
How would
say
I have
that?
heard weed? Did you raise me to? Did you?
So it went on and on. My parents had to get me a lawyer. The lawyer came, asked me questions. I wrote statements. I'm sure even the statement I wrote would have even put me in further problems because I wasn't even sure what to write. And I had such a terrible experience, and I was there. My parents couldn't bail me. They said the school was taking it up. The school wants to have a case. So it is my parents versus my school, or my school versus me. I was there, and after lots of back and forth with my lawyer, I was released. My parents were even like, even if they don't want to release, the boy should be here. At least, even if
Exactly.
he's innocent, he should be here. But somehow he was protected, and because he's the son of a very high-ranked politician, so don't even want to
Nice.
mention him.
Nice.
And that was how I had to face it alone in the place. And while I was there, I met a pregnant woman. I met young girls, and I kept asking, "Why are you here?" Different issues, different cases, and I even felt more empathy for them. I knew my parents. My dad is learned, and I knew he wouldn't want to leave me there. I knew he was going to fight for me. So that was my confidence. So I was even more interested in other people's issues, as much as I was pitying myself, and there was nothing I could do. And then I was released after 5 days, and I was not the same. For 5 days, I could not have my bath, I could not do anything. One of the things that happened that was really disgusting was that every night I was there, one policeman would always come. "Ah, you are going to the prison. You're just 16 years old. You're going to end up your life in the prison. Do you know that this is life imprisonment? Let me sleep with you. If I sleep with you, I'll be able to talk to the DPO.
Oh,
I would be
God.
able to, they'll be able to release you." Next day, someone else is coming with the same line. There were so many girls that gave in, and then they bring them out of the cell, and then they go sleep with them in some other offices within the police station. All of these things. And then when I came out, I apologized to my parents. It was a whole lot of drama. Let me not take much of our time. And then my dad said I wasn't going to go to school again. He was going to deny me access to education since I did not know what to do. I had bungled the opportunity, all of that. And then my mom says, "Okay, after staying at home for some weeks, they finally allowed me to go back to school." So I was happy that, okay, thank God, now that I'm in school, I'm not even going to talk to any stranger. I'm not going to talk to anybody. I just want to read, finish school, and leave on to, other things.
Yes,
Not
absolutely.
knowing that when I got to school, they had been looking for me. Crawford University had sent a letter to Getre Polytechnic. They are taking my notes from my bag, my
Abba.
ID. And they had sent a letter to say this particular student is dangerous and all of that. And when I got to the school notice board, they had declared me wanted with my picture. And then,
Without
under
investigation, without even asking.
me. And then they wrote, "Anyone that has anything to do with Ayobelo does it at his or her own risk. She's a dangerous drug dealer and she's wanted." 16-year-old. 16-year-old. And I saw it and I wailed. I'd been holding on, through the police station, staying at home. So for the 3 weeks, my parents were disciplining me and asking me to stay at home. They thought I'd absconded. And immediately I saw it, so I was already the gist on campus. I wailed, I cried, like, what is this? My parents were already at the point where they were forgiving me and everybody had healed, or trying to heal and look away from the whole issue. And this is taking me back. And immediately they saw me There was a whole of their classmates that didn't want to talk to me. There were people coming to me, "Ayo, what happened?" People dragging me. For a 16-year-old, I was traumatized. And then I went to the school
Imagine.
management, who was around. I went to the HOD. He was so judgmental that me, I'm a prostitute, all of those things. Then I had a meeting with the rector. He came to school. He said, "Who am I?" He asked me to call my dad. My dad, that I'm just even trying to appease. Where did I meet the guy? I've spoke the name of the school that they said I've been supplying. That's not the first time they would see me supply drugs. When adults,
Abba, now.
when adults are talking passionately about something you know nothing about. In fact, I stood for hours at something. I thought, can I just drink water? Telling different people the same story. What happened? Where did it happen? Who did you go? And I'm like, can you people just let me breathe? And I had that experience, and they said I was going to face a panel, and it went on and on for months. And at the end of the day, I was rusticated for something I
For
know
something
absolutely
that you knew
nothing.
nothing about.
And since that time till now, I have not seen that guy.
My
And
friend.
when my parents tried to fight and to ask for the guy and all of that, the school kept protecting him. And at some point, they said, "Oh, they've also rusticated him too,"
A big lie.
which I know is not true. And that experience actually affected me a lot. But I'm happy because it really spurred me into action. And then I asked myself, "What exactly is happening? How would this happen to me? This is wrong." And I said, "I'm going to be a lawyer." That was what I said to myself. That no, I think I want to be a girls' rights advocate. I think the reason why this happened to me was because I couldn't fight for myself. And in all of this, my mom could not play a major role. My dad played the main role. And somehow my dad did not believe me. As a mother, if you look into the eyes of your child, you can tell if your child is
If your
lying or
child is
not.
lying or
As
not.
much as my mom knew I wasn't lying, but there was little she could do because she was incapacitated. All of the meetings, my dad would be the one to attend because he is more educated and he's the father and he's the man of the house. But my mom, who knew, could do barely nothing, just very little. And then I said, "Okay, this is what I'm going to do." Fast forward, my dad, after lots of begging, I gained admission to OU. I wanted to do law. I didn't get law. I was in sociology. And I'm like, "God, what is sociology? I don't like this course. What is this? This wasn't what I wanted. I want to be an advocate. I want to speak up for girls on different issues. I want to go back, to that place and make sure that I can speak up." And when you just have this revenge and come back planned up in your head, and then that's also to say that life actually doesn't go on that straight line of saying, "Okay, this is what they did to me, this is what I'm going to do back." So I thought, okay, sociology, what can I do with sociology? And then first year I failed woefully because I was not interested in the course. I was still battling trauma from the polytechnic. I didn't want to mix with people. I didn't talk to my classmates. I was just this girl that just did that thing. I didn't want to have friends. Once bitten, twice shy. Matriculation meant nothing to me because I'd done it before. So I was just this bitter girl that was just living her life. And I told my parents, "If I just have the opportunity to go back to school, I don't need your money. I don't just leave me alone. Just let me go." Because I brought a lot of shame to the family already. So it was more like being an outcast. And then, not until my second year, I heard about an NGO, heard about the things they do. I'm like, "Wow, I think I like this, but I don't have the money. I don't even have anything. I don't even have the knowledge. There's no capacity strengthening or even capacity building." And then, while I was doing my research and all of that, I now discovered that Osun State had the highest prevalence of major population. And I know that I've actually been caught as well as a child. We've had that conversation over and over again. And then I was invited to a conference on female genital mutilation, and they talked about types of female genital mutilation. I saw the type that was carried out on me. So the anger of everything that has happened, I just channeled. I felt, okay, I cannot practice law officially. I should be able to do advocacy. And I don't think I want to, I have healed to the point where I want to, you know, maybe go to the prisons. I don't think I want to do that. I think that is going to shatter me. So let me work with this FGM that I can still, that I don't really have so much. I wasn't really aware when they carried it out, but I know it's a form of injustice. So I just wanted to sum up all of my energy and anger against any form of injustice towards ending FGM. So when I'm fighting FGM, I'm not just fighting against FGM, I'm fighting about against everything,
everything
that affects the rights of a woman, the rights of a child, but particularly sexual and reproductive health, because that is the one, you know, that is so demanding and can actually affect everything you build. If a girl is not empowered to have information on sexual and reproductive health, even if she goes to one of the best schools in the world, the outcome can truncate all of those
every
things.
Single thing she has worked for.
So that was how I began. And then I started volunteering for different organizations. And then when I found the purpose, I got excited about my course and I put up in school. And, you know, in my third year, I became the vice president. I mean, from a department, I didn't even want to talk to people.
Wow.
I was able to put my life and get the votes of people, and I served as the vice president. And from there, I was able to get volunteers for my office, and people came around. We went to schools, to villages, and then we started 15th of May 2015. So then we used to be called Ladies Circle International.
Oh.
When we carried out all of those projects, and then we had to change our name to Initiative for Girls' Rights and Health Development after we discovered that someone abused Ladies Circle International with Corporate Affairs Commission.
Oh.
So that's basically how I started, or what prompted, you know, how I started.
Wow. I'm speechless. And I feel riled up in me, because I think maybe because I'm also in the same space, you know. Injustice against women and children is something that really gets me angry a lot of times. And now hearing your story, first of all, thank you for sharing that, because I can only imagine how much strength it took to be able to share that story with me here on a public platform. And I can only imagine also, you know, the fact that our government failed you as a child. You know, the government failed you as a child, the government failed you as a girl. I mean,
well,
you don't put children, you, wow.
And there are thousands of, I mean, thank God I survived. Yes, thank God I survived. There are thousands of young people now that have
going through the same thing.
I won't be surprised if you get into a prison and you see a 16-year-old boy.
It's even more annoying and painful that police officers would come. The fact that, first of all, it is a crime. Exactly. You know, sex for bail, when bail is supposed to be free, you know, they would write it on the wall. And then they would tell you, wow. I mean, and the fact that they were even a child. You are attempting to have sexual knowledge and relations of a minor.
From a law enforcement.
A crime. From a law enforcement officer. You are perpetrating. First of all, it was not even enough that you locked up a minor in jail. You see. Okay. Yeah. So, yes, thank you for sharing that. And I just really want to give you kudos for turning your pain into purpose. You know,
thank
because
you.
I can only imagine that it took a lot of inner strength for you to be able to turn that pain and trauma, especially when you didn't particularly have anybody believe you. Because I think the worst part or the most painful part is when you didn't do this thing and nobody believes you. Like,
yeah, nobody believed. And the only person that believed was actually incapacitated.
You get, you know, it's which also now basically went ahead to show you that when women do not have voices in the society, no matter how knowledgeable or empathetic they are, if they do not have a voice, there's nothing they can do. And also with the fact that at that point, you didn't have any, you didn't even have access to therapy to at least help you heal a bit. And you still went ahead to, you know, enter a new school and achieve all that despite your pain. No, I give you kudos. I give you kudos, honestly, for being able to, because it is a lot of work.
It is, but thank God for the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, Almighty, you know, and we thank God for the I give you kudos for that. And
thank you very much.
You know, looking at how, you know, you where you came from and now where you currently are, where you, when you started your organization, how has the experience been, you know, trying to break these barriers, trying to challenge harmful norms? How has it been, you know, going into this because I know you said you do a lot of grassroots work, you know, working with community. How has the experience been? Has it been welcoming? How hard has it been? Has it been fulfilling for you, you know, looking back?
Thank you very much, Balumi. Yes, I would say it's been fulfilling because, I mean, the passion is there. The reason is there. Once the reason is clear, even when you have challenges, you won't see them as challenges. So it's been an inspiring ride. I mean, the last 7 years will be 8 years, this year, 2023. And it's actually been good. I think it's easier when you share your story. When you campaign from a storytelling perspective, you know, it makes people understand you better. And that's why it's important to support organizations that are survivor-led. You know, that's just the least you can do. So just give the support to say, okay, this is what you're fighting for. You know, let's do it. But it's actually been good, but it's been a learning curve, because passion is not enough. We can say passion is not enough in this matter. Because you're dealing with people, you're dealing with government. So it's been a smooth ride for me, but the challenges has been setting up the idea, building up the organization. You know, I just had a passion to say, okay, let's campaign against FGM and forms of harmful practices, harmful social and cultural practices. That's everything IGRAG does, from social injustice to all forms of things. But it's just that we prioritize female genital mutilation because of the prevalence.
Prevalence,
in the
exactly.
Not just
prevalence.
But we do a whole lot, you know, more than that. We do SGBV response. We do local philanthropy, you know, giving money to people, supporting people, local charity. You know, we just don't want to start explaining all of that, because there's this idea of conceptualizing and streamlining your mission and vision so it doesn't look like you are everywhere.
Yes,
but the thing is,
exactly.
The rights of young people, it's actually interwoven. You know, as much as I work on FGM, I am being called when it comes to cases of domestic violence, when it comes to cases of rape, you know. So I attend to a whole lot of issues, but it's still within the same scope, making lives better for, you know, women, young people, and children. So that has been it. The Nigerian factor of setting up an organization, registering with CAC, carving out policies. You know, at the beginning, it was really stressful because I did not get the needed, the required support or guidance. And that's why it's important to have mentors. And for mentors, I don't think it's a must that you have physical access to them. Social media has made life easy. And I also believe in observing the mentors from afar.
From
You know,
afar.
I don't know, maybe mentoring by observation. Yes, mentoring. There are so many people that mentor me and they don't even know. I follow them on social media, I read up on them, I research about them, and they don't even know that I adore them so much. So I think it's important to prioritize mentorship by observation and also celebrate the small wins. You know, I'm not so big on things in life. It's just about setting a goal and achieving it. You know, when I look at the number of people that I've influenced in my circle and through the organization, it gives me peace, you know. So it just washes away all of the stress that I have been through in setting it up. Of course, there's been some backlash. You know, you're trying to push a positive change and there are people hindering you, saying the opposite, you know. I've just found a coping mechanism to either walk away or find ways to work with them. So that's how the journey has been in the last 7 years.
Wow. That's a long time. And I even understand that in this part of the world, for an organization to have spent that long in existence, in operation, kudos to the leadership of the organization, because it is not easy. Let's be honest. It is hard. It is hard, honestly. And I'd also give you kudos for that. You know, just a quick one. What do you have any particular experience in your advocacy work that would stick with you forever? Maybe something interesting or something significant that something that was an experience that was significant for you in the course of your advocacy that you'd love to share with us?
Of course, there are a couple of them. There are a whole lot of them. But let me share recent ones. One thing about the organization is that I try to make sure that as much as it's a corporate institution, I try to try to make it flexible, particularly for young people, since it is youth-led. So what we do is, even when we have volunteers, I take it upon myself to train them for free, you know, on different things I struggled with, you know. So one of the perks of volunteering with us is you have access to all of these trainings, you get certificates and all of that for free. And I have seen how the lives of young people are being transformed. I mean, it's been 7 years. I know people that joined the organization, maybe when they were in part two, and now they've graduated, they've served, they've moved on, they are working. And I can see, you know, the visible impact. I have a whole lot of them like that on my WhatsApp, and it melts my heart. Another one that actually inspired me is a recent community outreach we had just this Christmas, and then we just invited communities to talk to them about harmful practices, why they should stop and they should join us. And then we gave them, you know, foodstuffs for the festive season. The looks on their face, the kind words, the appreciation, the prayers, you know, at some point it's the regular routine. But there was something about this particular woman's prayer that made me melt. It just made me pause to say, wow, it means we are doing something very good. I mean, you sometimes you don't know how big you are until maybe people tell you and all of that. I mean, I have imposter syndrome a lot. Let God help
me. I know, I'm always, right? I think it's something that we all struggle with.
Yes, I hardly amplify what I do. I know people who have not done up to, who do not have as much as I have, that have, you know, made a lot of noise. And I'm like, you know, whoa.
I don't have the strength.
Exactly. So the reaction of that woman and that kind words, you know, really made me very, very emotional. So that's one experience I have.
Wow. Thank you very much for that, because I can only imagine how, because I know that, you know, putting in a lot of work most times, and you're always, there's always one issue or another to deal with. And, you know, the fact that, you know, people sometimes, you know, out of the blues, you see somebody appreciating your work. I can imagine how it feels like. And then I think at that point, you now stop and you're like, ah, that's true. I've been doing a lot too. You know, I have been putting smiles on faces of people. Yeah, so I can absolutely relate to that part, you know. So yeah, just going forward, if you are going to, what advice would you have given your 16-year-old self when she was going through that experience? Like, if you had an opportunity to give her a word, you know, during that traumatic experience, what would you have told her?
What I would have just told her, I would have said a lot of things. So I'm really struggling to streamline it into a sentence. I would have just told her that everything actually, works out for a reason. And most importantly, if you love God, it will work out for your own good. So everything works out, everything happens for a reason. That's a general belief we all know. But if you now love God, it will definitely work out for you. So that is what I would have told her. Just calm down. You'll figure it out. Eventually you'll figure it out if you don't stop. And then also for young people, when they say calm down, take it easy, rest, I don't think I want to believe that. I'll tell every young person, don't mind them, don't rest. You rest later. Work, do the work right now. Pay the dues now. Pay the dues now. Don't rest. Don't let anybody say, well, I'm stressing. What stress are you stressing yourself as a 16-year-old? Read everything you can read. Ask questions. Try to relate to people. So that's what I would have. That's what I would have told my younger self. Be hungry for knowledge. Be consistent with your pursuit for knowledge and don't rest. Don't rest. What are you resting for at 16? So
Yeah,
that's what I
thank
would have said.
yeah, thank you very much, Ayo.
Wow.
This was a very emotional episode. I had to hold myself back from crying. You know I'm a cry baby. I had to hold myself back from, you know, but yeah, thank you very much for sharing your story, and I'm really happy and proud of the fact that, like a phoenix, you know, you rose from the ashes and, you know, everything is all beautiful now. You know, everybody that said you were a disgrace at that point, look at you now.
I'm not there yet, and I'm
If
hoping.
that's, and that is the voice of imposter syndrome. That is the voice of imposter syndrome. Just remember that. I just hope you, and I want you to always remember that you're a very, very strong influence for a lot of young girls and a lot of young women. And a lot of us, you know, a lot of us, you know, that work with you in the same field, you're a source of inspiration for us, you know. I mean, even though you may not hear it a lot of times, and we are proud of you, and we are proud to know you, and we are proud to be with you. So yes, thank you very much. Hi folks, thank you so much for listening to today's episode, and I'm very sure that you enjoyed, scratch that, I know that you enjoyed this episode. Please watch out for subsequent episodes, and please do not forget to subscribe and also share the link with your friends and networks. Bye, see you next time.